Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. And podcasts are also available under Public Affairs. Welcome to the show. Today is March 18th, 2020. The markets were down today, with the Dow closing at 19,898, the NASDAQ at 69.89, and the S&P at 23.98. Our topic tonight is considerations in estate planning through divorce. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Lori C is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear us without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I'll do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air or off air, whatever is more comfortable. You can just give your question to Lori if you don't want to talk on air, and she'll write it down and bring it in to us. My guest this evening is attorney Alan Tuller, and I want to especially read his bio in light of our topic this evening, as it will demonstrate his knowledge and empathy for these matters. Alan serves as chair of Gross McGinley's Divorce and Family Law Group. He regularly counsels individuals in divorce, custody, and child support matters. In addition, he guides families, including those in the LGBTQ community, through adoption, guardianship, and legal name changes. As a domestic relations mediator, Alan helps adverse parties reach agreements while easing the burden of legal fees. In addition, he is a trained parenting coordinator, able to be court-appointed to work with parents in settling disputes outside the courtroom. We might need all this over the next several weeks. As a master to the Lehigh County Family Court, Alan Tuller helped implement the Lehigh County three-tier domestic relations system. He served with the county for 3 years, during which time he held de novo support hearings and custody conferences and acted as a master in divorce. Prior to practicing as a family and divorce attorney, Alan provided counseling services to those struggling with addiction and family challenges. Welcome back, Alan.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for venturing out. We appreciate it. We're just a very small crew here, so we're being very careful in light of what's going out there with the coronavirus. Before we start on our topic, do you want to just let us know some of what you're feeling and thinking with what's going on with the coronavirus and how it impacts the legal aspects of what you do?
I think we went from 0 to 60 in no time at all. A week ago, we were reading about this in the newspaper, and within the last 48, 72 hours, we've gone to schools being closed, offices being closed. I work remotely, as I know you do as well. Mm-hmm. We have a skeleton crew at our office at the moment. Our attorneys are, by and large, all working from home. Malls are closed, restaurants are closed, bars are closed, all non-essential businesses per, state directive are closed. We've never been here before. I've never been here before. I'm 55. I don't know this landscape at all. The phone calls are beginning. People don't know what to do. They're scared. They're confused. They don't have information. I'm a family lawyer. We have custody orders. Custody orders tell people what they're supposed to do with their kids and where their kids are supposed to be on any given day, at any given time, any given week. People are worried about whether their kids are going to be safe. Where are their kids going to go? Where are their kids going to be? Who are they going to come into contact with? People pay support, child support. People pay alimony. Businesses have closed. Small business owners aren't getting revenue. People who work for businesses are being laid off. They're not making money. I think it's going to be a very, very tough and confusing time coming up. Not being able to go anywhere. Thank goodness we're entering, warmer and nicer weather where you can at least step outside and not feel, cabin bound. But I think that tempers are going to flare and patience is going to run thin.
Yeah, that's what I had thought about that even when I was looking at our topic tonight. And I thought, wow, this could end up being something. And so people have to really check their tempers and check their, patience when they're dealing with these close quarters, and get outside if you have to kind of make some room for some of this. But back to your point about child support or child custody and worrying about where your children are, or paying child support or paying the alimony, or even people who are going divorce, some of that is just going to have to be put on hold a little bit. And practically for every question you have, you could add 10 more questions. So everyone's just going to kind of have to have patience and see it through, all working together.
Yeah, well, I mean, the courts are struggling to adapt to this new reality. I think it would be well for everyone listening to understand that this is uncharted territory for everybody. The courts, which, are never the fastest running vehicles on the highway at any given moment to begin with, are going to be running much more slowly and less efficiently going forward. It will take more time to, get your matter scheduled. It will take more time to have your matter heard. Conferences are all being done by telephone. That, creates logistical challenges for people. We're all learning on the fly.
Well, in the tax world, we also are running on a skeleton crew, and it's tax season. And we recently learned that they're extending the time to pay until July 15th, 90 days. That's good news for the people who owe, perhaps, but they have continued to keep the same tax due date of April 15th. So that makes it especially challenging for people who are in our business to prepare tax returns, because it's not just the person-to-person contact, it's also documents and files and papers that people are exchanging that we're told some of this could live on surfaces. So what happens when someone wants to drop off a stack of papers at your office? Well, the offices are closed now, run by a skeleton crew. They have to use precautions when taking those papers, but it makes it a little hard to return paper documents to clients or to print a tax return for them to sign. Luckily, so much of our business, and I imagine yours too, so much can be done electronically these days, that not just electronically filing the tax return, but also transmitting the copy of the tax return to the client electronically. So we have means to do that through secure portals. But there is still a whole group of people, especially our elderly, who don't have access to electronic delivery, still aren't using computers. So there is still quite a group of people who may not be getting the information that we think we're communicating to our clients through emails and websites. But for those people who aren't on the internet, they may not be getting this same updated information. So there is a lot to navigate. Tonight, folks, we are going to be talking with attorney Alan Tuller of Gross McGinley about estate planning through divorce. And of course, we planned this topic some time ago, not knowing that we were going to be in the situation we are today. So Alan's advice is, probably let's all be nice to each other and patient with each other as we navigate the different options that we have. But tonight we were going to particularly talk about estate planning considerations through divorce. what happens during separation and what happens after divorce. So if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And you can talk live with us, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can give your question to Lori C., and she'll write it down and bring it in to the studio for us. 610-758-8810. Back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. This evening, I have a guest, Attorney Alan Tuller of Gross McGinley. He's the chair of their Divorce and Family Law Group. And we are talking about estate planning considerations through divorce. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with us or off air, whatever you're more comfortable doing. Many people think, Alan, that estate planning is just about when you die, but estate planning can be about protecting assets during lifetime as well. So I don't think it hurts to start at the beginning using your experience in family law. If you're single and planning to get married, what might be some considerations you'd want to consider when joining two financial lives?
Well, I mean, first and most importantly, understand that when you're talking to a divorce lawyer, certainly this one, you're talking to someone who is not an estate planning lawyer. And I have wonderful attorneys in my firm. Nick Nanovic comes to mind, who I refer all of my estate planning needs to. But there's no doubt that the prospect of getting married and or the prospect of separating with an eye to getting divorced calls into question and, you know, brings a spotlight onto, you know, estate planning questions and needs. So if you're planning to get married, I mean, you need to understand that when you get married, you are now subject to Pennsylvania law. Mm-hmm. We live in Pennsylvania, regarding, you know, what happens to your estate if you die. And you can have, you know, estate planning, create a will, and try and manage your estate plans accordingly. But at the end of the day, the fact that you're married gives your spouse certain inalienable rights. Essentially, your spouse can elect a third of your estate, regardless of what you think your estate planning will accomplish, if you're married. So, you know, people who come into a marriage with nothing generally don't need to worry too much about what they're planning to do. People who come into the marriage with assets, with property, it sometimes behooves them to contact a lawyer, and maybe not just a family lawyer like me, but also an estate planning lawyer. So, for example, you would come and talk to me about, do I need a prenuptial agreement? Prenuptial agreements will address within the body of that agreement, you know, how estate planning would be impacted by a separation, for example. And so a prenuptial agreement can be a very important document that you can use to protect those assets that you bring with you into the marriage. They can also protect assets that you acquire during the marriage. Prenuptial agreements are very malleable documents. They can be as narrow or broad as you want them to be, as long as both people sign them and there's adequate disclosure in advance of signature, Pennsylvania courts generally enforce them. Whether or not they're fair is not a relevant, you know, line of inquiry for courts. They look at, did you sign it? And were you upright and breathing when you did? And if you did, they're pretty much enforceable at that point.
So that prenup trumps the elective share.
Correct.
If someone passes.
If the terms of the prenuptial agreement, if the triggering events have been satisfied, yes. And most prenups trigger upon separation, and that's a term that's generally defined within the body of the prenuptial agreement. In other words, what does it mean to be separated? Does someone have to have physically moved apart? Does someone have to have sent a written notice to the other person, e.g. a letter that says, we are separated? Or does someone need to file a divorce complaint? But typically, that term should be defined in your prenuptial agreement. Otherwise, you know, Pennsylvania Divorce Code, you know, there's a established body of case law that tells us, we attorneys and the courts, what separated means.
Okay, so let's say they didn't do a prenup, but they had some accounts in their own name when they were single. They had no children. And quite often you'll see folks, when they don't have kids, they might name their parents as the beneficiaries or siblings as the beneficiary. And they may not have taken the time to update the beneficiary designation to a spouse. Then they get married. What would happen in a divorce? Would there, if you can even explain that, if they, would that be subject to the elective share if something happened? Or
First of all, it depends on whether or not the asset in question passes through the estate and is subject to probate. And as you know, for life insurance policies, for example, is a classic case. They're not. If you have a beneficiary designation, the payout is immediate to that beneficiary. It doesn't go through probate. It's not subject to your will if you have one. So if you don't update it, you could end up with a fight on your hands after you're dead, and who knows how that fight's going to turn out. So, you know, ordinarily, you get married, and if you die and you don't have a will, you know, all your jointly titled property is going to pass to your spouse, and the things that have beneficiary designations are going to be paid out to those designated beneficiaries, and that's pretty much the way it's going to work. It's important for listeners to understand that the mere act of filing a divorce complaint and starting a divorce does not suspend your estate planning, and it does not suspend your spouse's rights under Pennsylvania law as it deals with trusts and estates. In order for your will to no longer be enforceable, essentially, and in order for your spouse to no longer have his or her rights, grounds for the divorce have to have been established. And grounds are established under, you know, essentially one or two ways. Both parties have signed their affidavits of consent, agreeing to the entry of a final decree in divorce, or you can establish that the parties have been separated for the requisite period of time, now 1 year, Pennsylvania. You know, has the master in divorce been appointed? You know, those kinds of things. Because otherwise, you file a divorce and you get hit by a bus 6 months later, guess what? You know, your spouse is getting everything.
Okay. That's what I was wondering, too.
Yeah.
So, all right.
And it happens.
With marriage comes children, and so I was curious as to, sometimes comes children, what am I saying? Not everyone has children, I apologize, but often with marriage comes children. So I want to talk about in our next part about how asset titling, beneficiary designations, and estate planning might evolve with that when we're talking about couples and children, and how it might be important for a spouse to protect assets, possibly for their children, especially if there might be you know, a blended family of some sort. So we're coming up on our second break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. I'm talking with attorney Alan Tuller of Gross McGinley. He's the chair of their Divorce and Family Law Group. And you can talk live with us on air, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can give your question to Lori C. and she'll write it down. Again, 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY offers many choices and real voices.
This is Karen Elchar. Join me and other hosts each weekday from 9 a.m. to noon for WDIY Classics, medieval to Baroque, romantic to modern, along with concert information and artist interviews.
WDIY is the Lehigh Valley's local source for NPR news, public affairs, and diverse music at 88.1 FM and streaming on WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here at WDIY.org. Podcasts of prior shows are also available there under Public Affairs. This evening, we're talking about estate planning considerations in divorce and speaking with the chair of Gross McGinley's Divorce and Family Law Group, attorney Alan Tuller. And understanding, as you mentioned earlier, they're really separate aspects in dealing with divorce and estate planning. And you mentioned Nick Nanovic from your firm, Alan, and he was on recently, probably just a handful of weeks ago. And the podcast of that show is on WDIY.org under Public Affairs as well. So Nick and I go way back with the Estate Planning Council. So thank you for mentioning him.
He's a good guy.
Yeah. So I thought it was still very important because I've had clients go through divorce, and it's very fascinating to me to watch on the financial side what they're worried about, what they fight about. So I just thought it would be important to kind of talk about this topic. What are we thinking about when someone's going through a separation or divorce as far as the assets and the titling and the beneficiary designations and kind of what happens during the separation. But if children are involved, we mentioned the prenup. So I just kind of want to go back to that for a minute. It's not always just planning for each other. Is there any impact on this with children?
Enormous,
do we know?
Enormous impact. I mean, one of the most important things that a prenup can do is protect those assets that you have prior to the marriage, certainly, and maybe even certain assets that you might acquire or grow during the marriage for the benefit of your children from another relationship. So, you know, typically, you know, I'll have people come in and this is now going to be their second marriage, perhaps, and they have children from a prior relationship, and they want to protect, you know, the inheritance for that child or those children. And you need to have a prenuptial agreement in order to successfully do that, because, again, all of the estate planning in the world is not going to allow you to take 100% of your estate and shield it from your spouse if things go south. They're going to get a third of your estate, mm-hmm, if they want to.
Mm-hmm.
So otherwise, you know, it is the case that, you know, children don't have rights in divorces when it comes to property. They have rights when it comes to, you know, child support. They have rights when it comes to how the court determines their best interest with respect to custody orders and their, you know, well-reasoned preference being one of the factors the court's supposed to look at. But when it comes to divvying up the estate, children don't get anything. The estate is divided between spouses and spouses only. And one of the things that people are often frustrated by when they learn it for the very first time is, no, you don't get to say we're taking that particular investment account and putting it aside for the benefit of the kids so that we can pay for college, because it's a marital asset and your kids' post-emancipation financial needs are not something the court can even look at, let alone consider, let alone take into account when they're dividing things. So if you want to make provisions for your children in anticipation of a divorce, I think the best way you can do it is to do it before you get married in the form of a prenuptial agreement. Because once you get married, if you get divorced, you need to understand that you are not going to have any leverage at all when it comes to making arguments to the court about these assets were really intended to be kept for the benefit of the kids in the event that I pass. You know, you can't say the business should go to them or 20% of the business should go to them. If the business is a marital asset, your spouse is getting her share or his share of that asset in the divorce. Now, once the divorce is concluded, you can do whatever you want to with your share. You can draw up a new will at that point. You can leave 100% of what's yours. What you can't do is you can't direct how your spouse's share is going to be used. Again, unless you have that prenuptial agreement, which spells all of that out in advance.
Interesting. And we have seen where couples will have accounts that they've earmarked for education, and then all of a sudden they go through a divorce and all of a sudden it's not, you know, education accounts.
A 529 account is generally going to be seen by the court as something that's going to be set aside for the benefit of the kids every single time. But, you know,
this is brokerage accounts where they keep them in their joint names, thinking we don't want to put it all in a 529 right now. Maybe they have some in a 529, but literally an earmarked account that they have called it, you know, let's set that aside for education, and then who knows what happens. Alan, we had a call from Mona in Allentown, and she asked, is it true in Pennsylvania if you get divorced, you have to pay alimony after final divorce?
Well, it is true that you can be ordered to pay alimony. It is not true that you absolutely will. Alimony is governed by the divorce code, and it is, in theory anyway, a discretionary remedy. And it is a secondary remedy. And by that, I mean that the court is supposed to look to the nature and extent of the marital estate and determine whether or not the marital estate is sufficient to allow the financially dependent spouse to, enjoy some standard of living commensurate with what was available during the marriage. And if it is not, then alimony is looked to as that secondary remedy. Now, depending on the county you're in, as we sit here in Northampton County, if you find yourself getting divorced and one spouse's income is greater than the other spouse's income, you can guarantee, write it down, lock it in, that you are going to pay 1 year of alimony for every 3 years of marriage, because that's the formula here. It's not written in the code anywhere, but it's what's done. And, you know, you need to know on whose basketball court you're playing at any given time. You know, those rules control. But no, there is no sort of stone tablet that says you're divorced, you're going to pay alimony, or you're going to get alimony. It's a county by county kind of thing.
And with the recent changes in the tax law where alimony is no longer deductible for divorces after 1/1/19.
It's no longer the grease that you know, solves so many of the squeaks in your typical angry, acrimonious divorce that it once was. I mean, alimony used to be the great problem solver. It's like, oh, we can't get the scales to balance on how we're, you know, dividing the pie. We'll throw in some alimony and even things out because, hey, it's tax deductible to you, payor, and taxable income to you, payee. It's not anymore. You know, there's no incentive to pay it anymore.
Right.
So they've changed the formula. Mm-hmm. So what you would pay, you know, post tax code, you know, change is less than you would have paid prior. But yeah, it's
so they're giving a little bit of a break for the tax consequence that that they no longer get the benefit of, because quite often, as you said, it's usually the higher earning spouse is paying the alimony to the either non-earning spouse or lower earning spouse. So it took a little bit of the bite out of it if they got a tax deduction for it. So they have changed the formula to kind of take that that edge off a little bit.
Yeah, the formula has been reduced. I mean, what it used to be was if you had children for whom a child support obligation was due and owing, you would pay 30% of the difference between your respective net incomes. And if there were no children, you would pay 40% of the difference between your net incomes. But you got a tax break. Now you don't. So they've lowered the percentages of what you pay.
Okay. Mona, we hope that helped. And if anyone has questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
You are listening to Your Financial Choices with Lori Siebert on WDIY 88.1 Allentown. It's currently 57 degrees outside. It's 6:30. Tonight, rain mainly after midnight, low around 41. Thursday, rain mainly before 11 a.m. Then a chance of showers after 2 p.m., high near 57. Thursday night, showers mainly between 8 p.m. and 2 p.m., low around 49. And Friday, you can have a chance of showers, likely possible thunderstorms after 2 p.m., with a high near 74. Friday, more showers and possible thunderstorms before 8 p.m., but low around 40. Saturday is going to be bright and sunny with a high near 48. Saturday night, mostly clear with a low around 26. And for your Sunday, it's going to be sunny with a high near 47. Now, back to Your Financial Choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Shandi. Welcome back. We are talking about estate planning considerations in divorce with attorney Alan Tuller of Gross McGinley. He is the chair of their divorce and family law group. And if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can talk live on air with us. Or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can give your question to Lori C. She'll write it down and bring it into the studio. Alan, I wonder if you ever have someone come into your office and say, you know, I'm going through something with my husband or my wife. I'm a little nervous about what's going on. You know, I'm thinking about divorcing, and maybe they're seeing signs of something. Do you ever have people come in and talk like that? Or should, you know, with your years of experience, might you give some signs to people who might be listening that they should watch out? Could their marriage be going in that direction? Is there anything you've seen from years of doing this, or it can hit you from left field?
Well, both, but all the time. Yes, I mean, I people come in all the time. I think this is a common thing. I think most family lawyers would say, yes, we see this all the time. People will come in and say, you know, I don't know, things just seem a little weird, a little off, and I want to get some information. What are my rights if, you know? And that's it. You know, what are my rights if, you know? And as when I listen to those people who come in, what I generally discover is that they really don't know anything about the financial sort of aspect of their marriage. They don't know what accounts are out there. They don't know they don't know what's in the accounts. They don't see statements. They're not involved in decisions regarding investments. They are often, the only time that they ever see anything is when a tax return is presented to them sometime in, you know, April for them to sign. And so what I say to people is, you know, what you need to do is be informed. And that means that you need to start acquiring information and ask the question, ask your spouse if you can see statements. Can you see bank accounts? If they won't agree, I think you have your answer right there.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting when we meet with clients, especially when they come in as couples. I generally encourage the non-financial spouse to participate, to listen. Just if they don't feel like they need to understand everything, at least start to kind of have some awareness around the types of accounts and what those types of accounts mean, and asset titling and beneficiary designations and the importance of that. So I think it's all about being educated, and we really have no excuse, I think, not to stand up and kind of make sure that we have our arms around some of this.
There are real consequences because, if by the time you decide to hire that divorce lawyer because you've been served with papers, or because he or she has walked out, or you've found that text message that confirms the affair that you suspected but, never really nailed down, and you then find out that there have been 10 or 15 years of questionable transactions and poor investments and money being spent and lost and wasted, the court's not going to help you. The attitude that I've typically encountered with the courts with clients like that is, why didn't you do something earlier? And if you didn't know what was going on, why didn't you ask and demand access? You can't come in 10, 15 years later and say, oh, I want all that money put back on the table because he, she spent it, lost it, whatever. They're not going to give it to you.
Right. And if you're not aware, you're not going to know if things have gone missing or someone's changed beneficiaries on you and things like that. Now, I know that there is a period of discovery, interrogatories, where if you are in divorce, you have to ask, from the other parties. The two attorneys will ask each other, get all the assets from your respective clients.
Yeah, it can be an informal or a formal process. I think it depends on the lawyers involved. It depends on the complexity of the case. It depends on, the nature of the assets that are involved. Sometimes it can be as simple as a letter from one lawyer to the other saying, look, my understanding is this is a house and pension case and there might be a couple of bank accounts. Send me the current mortgage payoff in the house. We'll get an appraisal done and give me the 401k statement and the most recent bank statement, versus there are businesses and multiple commercial rental real estate, where you do have to engage in formal discovery, and formal discovery is governed by law, and there are requirements as to how long you have to answer it, and you have to answer it essentially under oath. You have the availability of the court to step in and intercede if one side thinks they're not getting what they asked for that they should get, or the other side thinks that they're being asked for things that they shouldn't have to answer or give. The courts are there as referees to make those calls. But yes, the point is, there's no privacy once the divorce starts. Everything is now transparent, or should be. And unfortunately, that is too often the very first time that people actually learn what was happening over the course of their marriages, things that they probably should have been paying attention to a lot earlier.
Well, then I want to go back to what you said earlier, too, then, about that tax return, because that tax return tells a very big story in a lot of ways.
If you know how to read one.
Right. Luckily, there are people who know how to read them.
You know what I know how to do? I know how to know when I need to ask someone else to read the tax return. That's what I know. Yeah. I can look at a tax return and go, okay, time to get someone involved here.
Yeah. And the supporting documents, like those non-qualified deferred comp plans that show up on the W-2s and stock options.
Ask for ask for the schedules, and yeah. then when you see all of the itemized business expenses, ask for the supporting documentation for those as well.
Yeah. It's a little bit of fun, I think. But okay, so we have a couple who decides to separate, and they're really squabbling a lot. Fighting, and maybe they had joint accounts. So let's say it wasn't as, you know, obscure as you know, what we've led it to be, like there's missing assets or things like that. There's assets. Let's say we have some joint accounts, they have some retirement accounts. One spouse might not be working or making as much money as the other spouse. We might have a higher earning spouse. That happens, you know, fairly often. Can a spouse have access to assets while going through a divorce?
Well, absolutely, because the thing to remember is that once the divorce complaint has been filed, and it doesn't matter who files it, you know, there's no advantage conferred on being the filing party. That court of common pleas, whether it's Northampton, Lehigh, Carbon, Monroe, wherever you are, that court now has jurisdiction over all marital property. And so the divorce code allows for all kinds of, what we call interim relief, if you will, during the pendency of the divorce proceedings. If you are worried that a spouse has been spending, lawyers call it dissipating a marital asset, which is essentially frittering away money, you know, maybe he, she's got a gambling problem. Maybe he, she has a paramour on the side, and you think that money is being diverted, et cetera, you can go into court on a petition for special relief and ask a court to issue a freeze order or an injunction. You know, that 401k, that investment account, that bank account can't be touched. No withdrawals, no transfers, nothing. You can ask for, again, this would be an ancillary to the discovery process, which you already have the right to engage in, but you can ask for statements for accounts that you otherwise don't have access to because maybe they're not jointly titled. They're still marital. He, she's got a business and he, she's got a business account. You've never seen that business account. You've never written a check. You've never seen a check. You've never seen a checkbook. You have a right to see the account. Mm-hmm. And if he, she won't give it to you, go to court and a judge will issue an order. Now, as to your right to use those assets, well, that, again, that depends on how the court sees the case. It depends on, you know, if you go into court and say, we got $100,000 sitting in an account over there, and I need $50,000 for XYZ reasons. Well, that's what we call a request for interim equitable distribution. And depending on the reasons that you communicate to the court, you may or may not get an order that says, yep, you get your $50,000 today, with the decision as to how that shall be allocated, credited, you know, left to the final equitable distribution order to be determined by the court at a later date. So you can either have a complete freeze where you can't touch anything. We sell a piece of real estate. We can't decide how we're going to divide those sale proceeds. Oftentimes that gets escrowed. We lawyers will set up an escrow account, and we then become responsible for it. We exchange statements with opposing counsel, you know, to let them know that we still have the money and, you know, it's earning nominal interest and it's sitting there until the parties either agree how they're going to divide it or the court tells us all how it's going to be divided.
So agreeing would be the better route in that case.
Well, agreeing is always the better route. I don't make money when you agree, but you save a lot of yours, so you should do that, yes.
Well, and quite often one or the other party may need some of those funds because quite often you have one party leaving the family home and may have to set up a new apartment or a new home.
Well, that to your point, I mean, you indicated, I think, in your opening question to me that, you know, one party may earn more than the other. And if that's the case, and it often is, well, we have a domestic relations section. You have the opportunity to ask for and perhaps receive spousal support or APL during the pendency of the divorce proceedings. And the point of that money is to, in theory, to allow you to be able to afford to pay your lawyer so that you can, you know, you can protect yourself during the divorce proceedings. But sometimes that award doesn't go far enough. So, for example, maybe you need cash to pay an expert. You know, you need a business valuation expert, for example. that can run tens of thousands of dollars. And that's an instance where you will see lawyers sometimes go into court and say to a judge, hey, there's $100,000 sitting out there. We need to value the business. We need $10,000 retainer, and there's no other source, so we need a $10,000 advance in equitable distribution.
Who would that valuing the business, now that you know you asked that question, mentioned that as an example, who would cover the cost of valuing that business? Would it be the responsibility of both parties in a divorce, or the one who's requesting it?
Well, at the end of the day, all costs and expenses associated with a divorce are subject to allocation by the court in its discretion. By and large, what you can expect in your average divorce is that you will each pay your own lawyers. You're not going to get counsel fees at the end of a divorce. Your spouse is not paying for your lawyer. Get that out of your head right now. But if you're going to value the business, again, if you and your spouse can agree on hiring one expert, then you'll share that expense. If you don't trust his expert and you want your own, you're going to pay for your own expert. You might get an advance up front. You might get $10,000 from that $100,000 account. But if it was a 50-50 case and you were going to get 50 of that 100 at the end of the case, now you're only going to get 40 because you got your 10 up front and you paid an expert. And you're not getting that money back again.
Okay. Folks, we are talking with attorney Alan Tuller of Gross McGinley, and we are taking your questions live or off air, whatever you're more comfortable doing, at 610-758-8810. Back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Tune up your week with a great variety of jazz music on WDIY. Monday through Friday nights from 9 to 11 offers many choices from the world of jazz, featuring traditional to modern styles, plus swing Sunday at 5 p.m. and improvisational jazz on the bridge Sunday nights at 10 p.m. Listen for new releases, interviews with artists, and information on upcoming performances right here on WDIY.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. Podcasts of prior shows are also available at WDIY.org under Public Affairs. This evening, I have my guest, Alan Tuller, attorney at Gross McGinley and chair of their Divorce and Family Law Group. And we are talking about estate planning through divorce, considerations in that, but talking about divorce as well, some of the financial considerations, which are very important. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. Email is also available, I forgot to mention, at yourfinancialchoices.com. Alan, let's talk for a moment about if someone is separated and maybe they just can't stand their spouse anymore and they had retirement accounts and life insurance policies, could they go in and change the beneficiaries on them prior to divorce? Because I know there's different rules for 401ks than IRAs as far as having a spousal consent to change a beneficiary to someone other than a spouse. Not sure if that applies on life insurance policies. And sometimes people don't work with attorneys. They try to do this on their own. What are the rules around that?
Well, I can't speak to the rules as far as what, you know, any given life insurance policy issuer might allow you to do or not do, or what any plan administrator might allow you to do or not do when it comes to your retirement account. Typically, your spouse's consent via execution of a form is, in my experience, needed to do those things. I have sometimes discovered, unhappily, that somehow people manage to do it anyway. If a divorce has been filed, again, the court has jurisdiction over that. So if a beneficiary designation has been changed and spouse finds out, expect to have him, her, or their lawyer in court saying, I want an order directing that designation to be changed back again, and that order will always be granted. Always.
Okay.
So what you cannot do is dispossess your spouse, essentially, during the pendency of a divorce proceeding. I mean, it's marital property. And in fact, it is the case, especially with retirement accounts, that courts will very often delay entry of a final decree in divorce until a marital retirement account that is going to be divided has been divided, so as not to risk, not to have this surviving spouse lose that benefit that they would be entitled to as the surviving spouse. Now, you can sometimes work your way around that by making certain that the beneficiary designation remains in place, and or that the beneficiary designation remains in place for, you know, a percentage or specific dollar amount of, you know, a particular account to protect that spouse, and then you can go ahead and, you know, get your divorce decree done before the actual division of the plan has been certified by the plan administrator. But those are things the courts, you know, are very sensitive to, is to make certain that people do not lose rights during divorces. And yeah, people try and play cute by half too many times. They'll come in, oh, I'll show him, I'll show her, I'm going to change the beneficiary designation. I'm like, well, you can do that, but guess what? Not for long.
Mm-hmm. Is that something that a lawyer would typically tell their client when they come in?
I tell my clients that.
Okay.
I'm like, yeah, you can't do it.
Okay. I wasn't sure.
I tell my clients the same thing. Do not change your beneficiary designations. If there's a lot of money in account and it's a joint account, you want to move half of it out, fine, move half of it out. It's all going to be accounted for at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Be smart, protect yourself, but don't be stupid and don't aggravate a judge by moving everything, because they're not going to like it. And finally, what I tell clients are, don't drop the health insurance coverage.
Right, right.
Because that's not going to go over well either.
Right.
But people will do those things.
I mean,
you know, separation brings out the worst in all of us.
Yeah. So now they get divorced. So what happens now, and what updates do they have to make? So as you mentioned, don't do anything prior. Now separated.
Well, you know, separated versus divorced. Versus grounds are established for divorce. So if grounds have been established,
okay,
but the divorce decree has not yet been entered, by all means, go talk to Nick Nanovic or someone who knows estate planning and get a new will, get a new power of attorney, get a new durable, you know, living will. Get all of those things done. Because if you should get hit by that bus after grounds have been established, but prior to entry of the final decree in divorce, your estate can now pursue the divorce itself. And so, in other words, if you file for divorce and you die and grounds have not been established, the divorce abates. It goes away. It's like it never filed. And you died and you die with a surviving spouse. And your surviving spouse has all of the rights that he or she has under Pennsylvania law, regardless of the fact that a divorce complaint had been filed.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if you watch Sunday Morning. I had seen a clip. I don't watch that much TV, but I had seen a clip on YouTube of the singer from the Cars, Rick
Ocasek,
and his model wife, Paulina, and I can't remember her last, or how to say her last name.
They were separated,
but I had heard that she wasn't in his will. So they must have had their ground. Well, we can't speak to their case.
I don't remember if they were married or just, I don't know if they were married or not. If they weren't married, then obviously.
I think they were married. They had not yet divorced, but his documents gave money to other people. She was very upset because all of her money had gone into the marriage, into like joint assets. They were together quite a long time. And in this interview, again, it's not facts. We're just listening to a little interview as an example, he had changed his documents. So they must have been similar to what you're talking about, where there was grounds for divorce and had gone through something, because I don't think they were divorced yet, she's not getting assets.
I knew that they had been separated. I didn't know much more than that. But New York's a completely different beast.
Yeah.
Okay. So you know, what he would have been able to do with, you know, again, was there a prenuptial agreement? I don't know. You know, how does New York define marital property and what can and can you not do with marital property? Again, I don't know. I just know that in Pennsylvania, if to take that example, if the two of them had been separated and living apart, maybe even a divorce complaint had been filed, but affidavits had not been signed and filed with the court yet, and they had not met that 1 year statutory year of separation period, and he died, the divorce would never have happened, and she would have been entitled to all of her rights as a surviving spouse under Pennsylvania law. Now, he could have written a will in Pennsylvania that left everything to his favorite cat. I don't know. His cat would get 66 2/3% of the estate, and she would have been able to go into court and say, I want my 33 1/3. I care what the will says. I get 33 1/3 because I'm the surviving spouse. So that's, you know, if you have a prenuptial agreement, you can preempt that. Grounds for the divorce, you can preempt that. The divorce decree itself, you can preempt that. And you're back to, I can make my own estate planning.
You know, I'll make a point, too. You have to also really pay attention to what state you're living in when you divorce. As Alan has mentioned, Pennsylvania, New York, California,
New Jersey.
You could have all different kinds of rules. So be cognizant of that as well. Real quick, we have a few minutes left. What if people miss something? So let's say they get divorced and they never changed their retirement account from spouse to maybe new spouse or to children. They kept the old spouse on there.
You know, that case went up to the United States Supreme Court not very long ago. And so I think I have this right. I don't hold me to it, but I think what happened was a now divorced spouse tried to make the argument that when her ex died, because he had failed to change the beneficiary designation on whatever policy it was that she had been named, on which she had been named, that pursuant to United States law as it relates to enforcement of contracts, that she was entitled to that. And that came into conflict with the basic principles of the divorce code. I think the state was Minnesota. I might be wrong on that. But, you know, so it became this, you know, conflict of laws question, you know, what applied, you know, the state law regarding the divorce, because they were divorced. And so she was dispossessed of any rights that she had as a spouse to that asset. Mm-hmm. And that asset had been awarded to him in the property mm-hmm. part of the case, I believe, versus, you know, basic contract law, which was, well, you're the named beneficiary and, you know, it wasn't changed. And I believe that the U.S. Supreme Court basically said, no, we're going with state divorce law on this. So generally the rule is, yes, I mean, once you're divorced, the party that is awarded the asset owns that asset. But I would not want to have to be in a position where I'm representing the estate or the, hey, he promised me he was going to make me the beneficiary designee and he didn't get around to it before he died. Change your beneficiary designations as soon as you're allowed to.
And
write the new will as soon as you're allowed to.
And some people might love that ex-spouse and want them to be the beneficiary, but then update it with a new date. If that is your intention.
I've had that happen, too. I've literally had clients go, she is the father, mother of our children, and it costs me nothing. If I die, that policy's out there. I want him or her to get it. That's an easy thing to do.
Yeah. And quite often, if you don't update it and state law governs, the divorce law governs, and it doesn't go to that ex-spouse, then it may end up in intestate rules, and that may not have been what someone intended, or it could be the default rules of the retirement plan or the custodian, and default rules might go to someone other than what you'd want as well. Alan, it's been fabulous having you this evening. Thank you so much for being here and coming in under these circumstances and talking about this great topic. Well, great topic for people who enjoy talking. stuff. Yes, not a great topic for the people who are going through it.
We are a sad alumni group.
Yes. How do people reach you at Gross McGinley?
Email is always the easiest way to do it. That's my first initial and last name, atuller@grossmcginley.com.
And Tuller is T-U-L-L-A-R.
Yes,
at grossmcginley.com. And thank you to Andrea Coyne,
she's fabulous.
Yes,
she's
for helping arrange this. Folks, this podcast will be available probably in several days as well at wdiy.org or yourfinancialchoices.com. Next week, I'm going to have David Elowich, a CFP professional, to discuss considerations in real estate investing. Thank you, Lori, for coming in tonight. Shandi, thank you for being here as well. Alan, and thank you, listeners, for tuning in and for Mona calling in with your question. We appreciate it. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.